Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Monday night installment here at Your Remedy Is in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various offensive litigating strategies. And this is with our speaker, Mr. David Merlin. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy Is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy Is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with your remedies in the law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes all of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known purely for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of your remedies in the law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremedyisinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you'll get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of that if it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much like how you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a private place that you could can go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded. Maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. And maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the further you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've educated to yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hopefully you'll pass that around. Freedom's Radio. If you're on the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button, fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. Every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator's screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedom's Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that, honestly, most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests. and it should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado at this time, I'm going to go ahead and turn the call over tonight to Mr. Edward, and he will introduce our speaker for this evening on the correction status call.
Thank you so very much, Martin. I appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, those of you that remember so far back into, I think it may have been junior high school, possibly freshman year of high school, there was a old English author that we read, and his name went by Goethe, or, well, that's how I pronounce it, G-O-E-T-H-E, Goethe. Anyways, he wrote a book, a play called Beowulf. One of the things that he said is, and I quote, "There are none so hopelessly enslaved as those who falsely believe they are free." That has got to be the most succinct expression of where we find ourselves today. Pick up any newscast, any talking head interviewing the man on the street. You know, what's it like to live in America, the United States? We're free. Yeah, male bovine excrement. All right, in addressing matters of Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 of our federal Constitution, President Madison said in the Federalist Papers, number 39, quote, "Its jurisdiction extends to certain enumerated objects only and leaves to the several states a residuary and inviolable sovereignty over all other objects." This is January 22nd. 1788, just 85 years later, nearly immediately following our Civil War. In United States versus Anthony, 24 Fed 829, the year was 1873. Quote, "The term resident and citizen of the United States is distinguished," meaning it's different, "from a citizen of one of the several states, and that the former is a special class of citizen created by Congress." So if you're a United States citizen, if you agree that you have a residence, you're a special class of puppy that doesn't exist naturally, but exists theoretically. Metaphysically, on paper only. It does not live and breathe. And it's also, by another court case, property and franchise of the United States. If Congress, in all its grotesque wisdom, decides to prohibit federal citizens, which a United States citizen is a federal citizen, not a state citizen, if they forbid a federal citizen from using a particular brand of toothpaste, or require them to be vaccinated, federal courts will think they are authorized to enforce this municipal law inside of all of the 50 union states. Supreme Court of the United States Justice John Marshall Harlan in 1901, actually predicted what has occurred to this day. And he said in part, "The idea prevails with some, indeed it has found expression in arguments at the bar, that we have in this country substantially two national governments, one to be maintained under the Constitution with all of its restrictions, the other to be maintained by the Congress outside and independently of that instrument by exercising such powers as other nations of the earth are accustomed to. And I want you to stop and think for a moment. In the entirety of the world, there has never been in the history of the world a nation where the people were the sovereign. It's always been a monarchy, or it's been with a president or a dictator or whatever, an oligarchy of rich and influenced people that have powerful people, whatever. And everybody else curried favor to them in order to have whatever success they could have in their lives, peace, comfort, possessions, whatever. And everybody else were just peasants. Useless eaters by some standards. Only in the United States of America, the several Union states, which, by the way, existed 8 full years before the United States came into being. It's only in the United States where the sovereignty rests in the people. Now, we have a Second Amendment. And the best part of it says, and I quote, shall not be infringed, end quote. Well, if it shall not be infringed, that means that you should be able to buy and sell freely. No taxes. You can buy anything that you want without anyone inquiring as to why or anything else about it. If you can afford it, you buy it. That means that whether it's a 22 bolt action rifle that my father gave me when I was, I think, 9 years old, I think I was in the second grade, Sears and Roebuck. It came in the mail. He bought it from Sears and Roebuck and paid for it by mail, and it came in the mail, delivered to the house. That's what he tells me anyways. I was too young to see it or understand or anything like that. It came for me for Christmas. Point being is that there was nothing to it. So whether it's that or it's a battle rifle, 3-0-8, fully automatic, select fire. You can send off 2-round bursts. You can just rip a machine gun with it. For a moment, anyways, usually it's going through a 20-round magazine or a 30-round magazine. You want a bazooka? No problem. You can afford a tank? No problem. I mean, this sounds like it's ridiculous, but this was the intent of the Founding Fathers. Remember, the farmers, the militiamen, they had the same equipment. In fact, they had some better equipment than the military had that they were fighting. Our farmers had better muskets, if you would, than what the British had at the time that the war started. Anyways, point being is that we have and never have lost the right to keep and bear arms. And it's only by our ignorance and by our willingness to be gullible, to do what we're told because that's how we're raised, that we have end up with where we are today. I talked to a gentleman earlier today, American of African descent, and I said, I don't want to upset you, but you are no more free today than your grandparents 8 times removed were before the Civil War, or 4 times removed before the Civil War. Worse than that, not only are you still a slave, but the white folk and the yellow folk got sucked up into it as well through our own ignorance. Anyways, that's what I wanted to say. I'm looking for GW. I don't see him here. I'm going to call him on the other line real quick. He doesn't usually miss these, and I don't think that I probably didn't remind him like I'm supposed to. You know how that goes.
While he's doing...
Go ahead.
Yeah, while he's doing that, folks, I want to step in here and take a moment and once again get my soapbox here and harp on the importance of joining statewide communications. What this does, essentially, is you have a bunch of information to fill out, you know, very, very easy, basic stuff. Where are you from? What are your interests are? Things of that nature. And what it's going to do is it's going to put you in contact with people that are right there in your local area that have the same interest that you do. The power that this can potentially hold is just unthinkable. Imagine a situation where you've got a popular court hearing where something profound is underway, and if 50 people, 100 people in that local area were to show up, for that, just to stand witness. Maybe the judge says, "Who are all these people?" And one guy in the front stands up, or one lady in the front steps up and says, "We're here for this educational group, and we're just here to quietly observe and learn and to make sure that the rules of civil procedure are being followed to the T, and that every man and woman is getting a fair shot here." Try to think for a moment the power that would have, what that would in short order bring about as far as all the officers of the court now being on their P's and Q's as, John Q. Public is watching intently. Please, at your earliest convenience, if you haven't already done so, go there and sign up and do a little investigating. See if you can put yourself in contact with people there in your local area.
All right. Excellent, excellent, excellent idea. Right now we have GW who has joined us and graced us with his presence. We're thankful. GW, I gave a background about how those people, the Americans of African descent today, are no better off as far as ownership is concerned as they were before the Civil War. And the worst part of it is post-Civil War, those of us of European descent and of Asian descent got sucked into it as well. We just changed masters. So with that, we're turning the call over to you. I'm going to mute out.
Okay. All right. Well, I was a little bit delayed here. I was on a call and just got time just ran away from me, so I apologize. So we're talking about this big conundrum. On this call, we're talking about correcting your status, which is done through a process of, well, first off, education and comprehension. That's the biggest part of it, is really understanding who you are and who you're not. And the other part is the paperwork that you actually submit, and that's where we help you and where Michael will interface with you and help you to get the paperwork filled out. It's not hard at all. It is relatively easy, and it just has to be done in a certain way, and you have to know what you're talking about when you go in for your interview. And so, with that said, I think Michael was just mentioning about the owning property and and how we are, well, we've all become pretty much a captured operation, whatever color you are in the United States of America, because if you're listed as a U.S. citizen, no matter where you came from, you're still in a place where you are categorized as property and a franchise of the federal government or Congress, so to speak. So how do you like them apples? Yeah, I know that I wanted nothing to do with that when I finally figured that out and changed and corrected my status back in 2008. And one of the reasons we talk about it that way is because it really, when you think about it, when you own property, you have a mortgage or you paid your mortgage off, you still, you know, you every year you've got the tax assessors, property tax assessors, that send you a bill and expect you to pay either that little small amount that seems to be kind of manageable, or, you know, can be a pretty good size amount in some places. And that's proof positive that you really don't own it, because if you stop paying that, a certain period of time will lapse, and they will put it up for a sheriff's sale. Or there's actually people that go on and there's businesses that make market courses on how to buy tax lien property. And there's a legal nexus for that, because if you think about it from their standpoint, which you never were told about this in the beginning, but if you think about it, property can't own property. So that's why you never get to own the legal title. You get the equitable title, which is because the property has been bifurcated. Same thing with an automobile, okay, a car that you own, a truck. It's actually, the title has actually been bifurcated on that. And so you have the equitable arrangements, which mean you pay all the bills and you get to operate it. And then they have the legal title, which means that every year, every so many years with an automobile, you've got to go and pay certain fees to keep it, the registration current. All right. And they get really upset with you if you don't do that. A little harder with a car to turn it into a sheriff's sale or a tax lien or something. I don't know. I don't even believe that happens. But most people are in that system are what should they say? You know, it brings about a lot of fear, okay, to not do something like that. And so, of course, we want to keep it current. And so, with that statement made, there is, I know that Michael's, you know, working on or working with some experts out there to bring about some more education that will really be of the utmost importance, I think, in going forward in the future, is being able to bring your property up and current as far as the land patent, you know, to be able to actually own it. And when you have your status corrected, you're in a beautiful place to be able to literally own land. But we're really not, that's really not the call that we're on tonight, going, you know, to go over all that kind of stuff. But it is nice that the correction process will, you know, has a lot of other benefits to it than just simply getting a corrected passport or a passport card and being able to operate that way. There's many more benefits that you can be a part of once you've done that. So, I'm trying to think of anything that's pertinent that's happened over the last week here with all the things that are going on that I could talk about, but I think my brain's a little scrambled right now. So anyway, I will ask Michael to unmute, and we can take some questions if you don't mind.
Sure, be glad to.
Okay.
Actually, Martin is going to take over this part. He's in training, or okay. Not really training. He used to do this for me all the time to begin with, in the beginning, and did so for many years. Then decided that he needed to go out and find his own way, which he's done, and now he's circling back to see what's going on. So let me turn the call over to Martin, and let's see what he remembers doing.
Go all the things my mind the most. All right, so star 2 on your keypad, folks. If you have a question, star 2, that will raise your hand. I'll see that hand raised, and then I will unmute you and announce you one by one, and we can keep a good orderly fashion in that way. For the listeners on the Freedoms Radio side, you'll see that little rectangular box. Type your question or your comment in there. Don't forget to please click submit, or we're not going to see it. We don't, the comment or the question doesn't just doesn't show up magically there. You have to hit the submit button. I say that because I'm guilty of the same thing. And we'll read that out over the air, and then the information provider can respond to whatever they like. Star 2 on the keypad, folks. Come on, we've got a huge call here tonight. I see quite a few new faces. I know we have to have a question in the group here. Don't be shy.
Well, we can go home early. Want to go home early?
No, it's too early for that now. All right, here we go. David in Texas, go ahead with your question, sir.
Okay, thank you very much. Hey, Michael, GW. I know. Hello. I believe it was 3 weeks ago I asked this question, and you gave me the answer. And ever since then, I've been dealing with some health problems with my wife, and I forgot your answer. So, real simple. Does correcting your status occur when you create the AOR or after you get the passport back?
By AOR, do you mean the affidavit?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So does correcting your status occur? Okay. First, philosophically, when you really, really understand who you are and who you're not, it's already occurred. Okay. But technically, when you fill out that affidavit, it's done. It really is. But then there's other things. Then there's other things that need to be where you want to get it corrected, okay, with the State Department, and have it, you know, pop up in case you ever pass through a checkpoint, or you know, you get pulled over or something like that. Getting the corrected passport is the easiest way of dealing with that issue, of course. You know, because you're standing on the side of the road, or you're going through customs, and the administrator, you know, takes your passbook and, you know, runs it through, and he's got the screen right there, and he says, oh, okay. And he's like, okay, let that guy go. That's the easiest, okay, to, you know, so that you achieve it that way. I hope that answers your question. I know I'm being a little long-winded with it, but, you know.
No, that's fine. And then I have a follow-up question. I understand that there are certain states when people elect, because they've corrected their status, not to get a driver's license, that the state authorities, state police, local police, whatever, are less than friendly towards that. Like I've heard on these calls in the past, Colorado. So my question is, once I correct my status, get the passport card done, everything, if I choose to keep a driver's license, is that a bad thing?
No.
Yes or no, and why?
No, it's not a bad thing. Because once you become and really understand okay, who you are, and you really have comprehension of that. And I would I would go over that. I forget what the case name. I know that, that Michael knows probably the. I'm not looking at my computer. I'm not looking at it right now, but
that's
there is
it's WW Cargill Company.
Cargill.
This is the state of Minnesota, 180 U.S. 452, and that was in 1901. And the verbiage is, quote, the acceptance of a license in whatever form will not impose upon the licensee an obligation to respect or to comply with any provision of the statute or with the regulations prescribed that are repugnant to the Constitution of the United States.
That's beautiful. Michael, that's why you're on my speed dial.
Yep. Thank you, Michael. And I just wanted to, I wanted to say that that right there, when it says the acceptance of a license in whatever form, and when it says in
yeah.
whatever form, it just covered every single type of license you can imagine. Okay.
That's awesome.
So
thank
once
you
you've
career
you bet.
And Michael Pierce.
Okay. You're welcome.
Alrighty.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Star 2 on your keypad, folks. If you have a question, star 2 to raise your hand. On the Freedoms Radio side, if you have a question or comment, make sure you click the submit button. Oh, yeah. I don't know, Mr. Edward. You might get your wish. Oh, no. Here we go. Jennifer in New York, go ahead with your question.
Hi. I wanted to make a comment because I just happened to go to the DMV the other day, and now New York State has three different licenses, and so there's one for U.S. citizens. If you're a U.S. citizen, you have to have the chipped one, and an unchipped one is for illegals or non-U.S. citizens, and then they had some other type of one as well. So I guess they want everyone to have a license now, whether you're a U.S. citizen or not, even if you're illegal. And I just thought I'd let you know.
Well, of course they do. They want everybody to believe that they're required to have one of these licenses, which is really a permission to do what is otherwise illegal or immoral. Anyway, it'd be interesting if you, whenever you go down there again and you want to renew your license there, Jennifer, that if you can, you know, have somebody there that, you know, you're going through the paperwork and say, listen, I'm a national with my, and my status has been corrected by the State Department. Here's my affidavit. Okay. I have a problem. I think we have a little bit of a problem here because I do not want to perjure myself and say that I'm a U.S. citizen and I'm not an illegal and I'm not one of these others that it says like a non-citizen national. So where what would I put on here? Because I don't want to perjure myself.
Well,
I did, tell you.
And they basically said, well, you don't need a license then. If you don't, if you think you don't need a license, then don't get a license.
Oh, good.
That's
good. Cool.
Yeah. And I want to share with you all that we're getting closer and closer for John. And John is on tomorrow night's call, but he won't be there tomorrow night. Let me tell you in advance, you're going to have me tomorrow night. I'll be your speaker. And I'll be. John has another engagement he's got to tend to, so I'll be taking care of that. But anyways, we're working. John is finally accepting my rationale. John is a peacemaker. Me? Not so much.
Disruptor.
Especially if we've had differences of opinion. point being is that John is becoming more amenable to the idea of the week after anyone has been stopped by a law enforcement officer of whatever status and given a ticket. Before anything else is done, there will be a federal lawsuit filed. You'll file it. We'll show you how. Of deprivation of rights under color of law. So that we get a court case number and a court style. The court style is that top part on the first piece of paper that on the very top in the center, it talks about what court it's in. On the left-hand side, it talks about who the plaintiff is, who the defendant is, or so forth. And then on the right-hand side is the case number and the judge's name and so forth. And then underneath that, you've got the title of the complaint. So you'll have that first. And then you follow up with a number of things. Jennifer, you have actually better recall on this than I will without looking it up and for the sake of brevity and time. You have a copy of a letter I sent you either from a governor or to a governor from the Department of Transportation. Would you like to talk about that? Or can you pull it up real quick and read it?
Oh, gosh. I'm not very good at pulling things
okay.
up.
Okay. Hold on. It'll take me long. I'll find. There we go. Travel. Bingo. Traffic court motion. Dialogue. No license necessary, right to travel, statutes. Letter, here we go. You're going to love this. This is from the Department, the United States of America Department of Travel. And it's to Governor Pat McCrory, dated November 23rd, 2015. 8 years ago, Raleigh, North Carolina. RE, violation of United States Supreme Court rulings regarding the right to travel. Subject, education of law enforcement and North Carolina judiciary, the judges. Dear Governor McCrory, we are sending this correspondence to make you aware of the unconstitutional acts committed by your law enforcement agencies and state courts against the people of North Carolina. These acts may or may not have been committed knowingly or intentionally, but we are writing to your office to ensure that these violations are brought to your attention so that they can be addressed and corrected. As you may or may not know, there are people in your state whose status is ostensibly different than the average United States citizen and are considered foreign nationals or American nationals with certain safeguards and protections under the law. Our primary concern is that their right to travel in your state are not infringed. In order to educate your law enforcement regarding foreign nationals or American nationals in your state, you can call the Department of State here in Washington, D.C. to get clarity, or you can go to the Department of the State's website. It gives the website for our and download the manual. The Department of State also offers training for your law enforcement officers free of charge to raise awareness and compliance. It goes on from there with a lot of just a little short. We have enclosed one of our affidavit forms for the exemption of registration and licensing for foreign nationals that foreign nationals have to file in your state to lawfully claim the exemption. The affidavit also can be used by U.S. citizens who are not driving or operating a motor vehicle for profit or for hire. Please forward this information to all your law enforcement agencies in your state to prevent any unnecessary lawsuits from being filed against these agencies for not following the law and violating the rights of the people to freely travel without interference unless they are a threat to the public safety. If you have any questions regarding this matter, please feel free to respond in writing by mail or fax any questions or concerns you may have, and we will be happy to answer and address them. Thank you in advance for your cooperation and consideration in this matter. Norv Eisenberg, Foreign National Division. Now, I wonder what that, where does it say that? Unnecessary lawsuits. I wonder what those unnecessary lawsuits are. Could they be deprivation of rights under color of law?
Most likely.
Yeah, most likely. So the point, I'm sorry?
John found an updated link, too, so there's of where they said to go and
right,
study.
Right, it's in the paper,
yeah.
Yep.
Okay, okay. I cut
Martin?
You off, so keep.
Okay, all right, good deal. All right, so that answers all your questions there, Jennifer?
Oh, well, I have one more if Michael's finished. Now,
yeah, I'm done.
regarding a Chase Bank credit card debt thing, I received a stack of papers about an inch thick, and John really can't deal with that at the moment. He's so busy, which is fair enough because it's not as important as everything else. And I'm just wondering if Martin is interested in looking at that and seeing if anything can be answered to that, please.
How did you know about Martin?
Because I bought the book.
Oh, that's right. Okay, good deal. Yeah. All right. I'll conference Martin in with you tomorrow. Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, what Ms. Jennifer is referencing is Martin. I'm going to tell tales out of school here on you, okay?
Oh, Martin.
Yeah.
He's bracing.
When Martin was a young and foolish man, he racked
went up.
Yeah, went up. He racked up, what was it, 30 grand? In debt? 37,000. And how much of it did you have to pay?
Zero.
Anyways, if anybody's interested in that little bit of reasoning, please give me a call, 1-800-625-4250. If you have my direct number, just call direct. Go ahead, Martin. Next caller, please.
Yep. All right. Now we've got Dexter in Indiana. Go ahead, Dexter.
Hello, everybody. GW, thank you for being on this call. Me and my fiance, we just recently signed all the paperwork, sent it in. But I hear you about correcting our status. I hear you keep talking about once you understand your status. Well, how can we, what do we need to do to be able to understand our status besides being on these calls? Is there some kind of literature we need to be reading or what?
Wonderful question.
That's right. Michael's out there.
Well, I think that there's a couple of different things, of course, and Michael has them posted on the website as downloads, they're titled, what was the title, Michael? It was the,
first is the website. The website is correctmystatus.com, correctmystatus.com. That'll redirect you to americanbybirth.com. And once you're there, you'll see at the very top of the header, two ribbons running from right to left. First ribbon says, once we were colonists, subject to a king, a primer, on jurisdiction. Read that. It's like 20, 23 pages. No big deal. And read it, reread it, and reread it again until you basically have it memorized. You're not memorizing it, but you're just so familiar with it. And the reason I don't want you to proceed until you've done that so many times is because the next topic is the greatest story never told. And if you have the understanding under your belt solidly, once we were colonists subject to a king, a primer in jurisdiction, then when you read the greatest story never told, it ties it all in together and you can understand. It's kind of like the difference between the New Testament and the Old Testament. People like to read the New Testament. It's short, relatively speaking, compared to the Old Testament. It's very straightforward, et cetera. That's what once we were colonists subject to a king, a primer on jurisdiction is. It's like the New Testament. But in order to understand the New Testament, if you don't have any foundation in the Old Testament, if you don't understand what the Levitical laws of sacrifice were, how could you possibly understand a sacrifice that took place 2,000 years ago? You can't.
Okay. Now are those the only two that we need to understand and read and understand,
yeah,
or is there anything else?
No, that's basically it in a nutshell right there.
Yeah.
The
okay.
other thing is that I purchased Black's Law 6th edition or earlier, 5th edition, 4th, 3rd, whatever I can get my hands on. You can find them on eBay or wherever, even reprint. I'd buy that dictionary. And when you look at words on a piece of paper that's in a legal document,
mm-hmm.
look it up in the law dictionary and see what it says. Sometimes you'll have 30 different definitions for the same word. How do you know, without them stipulating which definition they're using in context to that sentence you just read?
And the good news is that once you really have it in your soul and your understanding, and you understand your rights that were given to you by God and that are backed up by the Constitution, then you know that any one of those definitions that's repugnant to your God-given rights and what's in the Constitution, you know it's foul smelling, and you're not going to go with it. That's the good news. That's why you want to be acquainted with who you are and who you're not. You know, as far as all these things go, because once you really have that comprehension, then you hear something that's a little off. It's like, it's not for me, you know.
Okay, and then another question, if I can ask another one. When we get the new ID from the State Department, is that what you guys are calling the new passport?
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
That's what I thought. And my fiance and I, we're getting married on the 25th of this month.
Great.
Thank you.
Does anybody on this call, I know I talked to Michael about it already, and Michael, I'm not trying to step on your toes or anything, but does anybody know how a person can actually be married without being under the jurisdiction of the government? Or once you correct your status, that just moots everything as far as their control over you?
Yeah, interesting comment, you know. Now you're talking about something that very few people have actually done. So I know there is, and you are right that once you correct your status, you know, most of the paperwork that most pastors, priests, officials like that are wanting you to sign are, you know, basically stipulating, you know, U.S. citizen. So, yeah, that's one of those ones where it's tough. You know, because if you and your wife to be are on the same page and you're really solid and you trust each other and all that good stuff, and then it's not going to be a problem. But if you know where I see people having a lot of problems is family pressures, you know, when the family hears about it, or you know, you're trying to explain it to them, they're like, "What are you guys? You guys are crazy," you know, and then that can add a bunch of problems to it. But here's the good news, okay? Going back again to that Cargill, that Minnesota Supreme Court, where Michael had just read that says the acceptance of a license in whatever form will not impose upon the licensee an obligation to respect or comply with any provision of the code prescribed that is repugnant to the Constitution. So even if you do get a marriage license and you have corrected status, no part of that license that is repugnant to the Constitution can stand for you to.
Okay.
That's the good news. Now,
okay.
Now it's contingent upon you to understand what would be, you know, if there's anything in there that would be that's repugnant to the Constitution, your God-given rights. And so, but the good news is, hey, even if you do have it, if you have corrected status, you're in a higher place. You know, now you can dispute and defend anything in there that doesn't align with your God-given rights.
Okay.
That's my two cents.
Okay. All right. Now, how can we get the word out about this? Can we go to Twitter? Can we tweet about this? Can we talk to people? I mean, I've been talking to a lot of people, and they kind of look at me like, "What are you talking about?"
You're invited to post. Everyone on this call is invited to post anything they want about this call. I would hope that you would include the website correct. And I would not put correct my status on the .com. I would put AmericanByBirth.com because that resonance has better resonance than correct my status as far as someone not having a clue. There's no controversy with American by birth. You damn right I am an American by birth, by golly. You know, no problem. Correct my status? Okay. What do you mean correct my status? What are you talking about? Now you got to explain everything. So just go to American by birth. Encourage them to read, like I shared with you once we were calling a subject to a kink, et cetera. Post the phone number, the PIN number, and the time and the day that we do the Monday night calls.
Okay.
Invite them. And remember to put, when it's 9 o'clock, it's Eastern Standard, then 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific. I find if I put 9 Eastern, I got people in California calling at 9 o'clock their time. It's midnight here. So you got to spell it out for them. They're not, some that are not bright.
Okay. Well, I got some ideas I've been floating around. I'm going to call you tomorrow and talk to you about them tomorrow, Michael.
Okay. But everyone, you, Dexter, and everyone else on this call is encouraged to spread the word. Talk to them. Post it on Twitter, YouTube, whatever you can do.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right.
Well, thank you, gentlemen.
All right. All right. Next up, we've got Tommy in Louisiana. Go ahead, Tommy.
Yes, Michael. Could you send me a copy of that affidavit you were talking about?
I've already got my inbox blowing up with requests. I'll add you
okay.
right now.
I think I requested it a while back, but I never received anything from it.
Well, you know, you can always tell Louisiana. Just can't tell them very much.
Yeah.
Well, they just don't think this is like average.
Was that it for you, Tommy?
Yeah, that was it.
All right, appreciate you. All right, next up we've got Kent in West Virginia. Go ahead, Kent.
Good evening. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, excuse me. In reference to what Dexter was saying and what Greg was just saying about the Cargill Company case and Mike was saying, while if one was in the process of changing their status or had accomplished that, don't you think it's somewhat contrary to then go and get a license, whether it be a driver's license or a marriage license or a fishing license or any other kind of license? I mean, doesn't it sort of appear that you're wavering back and forth? I mean, if we're going to stand on our status, and this goes to the next point that I want to make about what Mike was saying about John as a peacemaker versus a little bit of a different position that Mike takes. Shouldn't we, you know, if we know what's going on and we know what the facts are, shouldn't we be standing on that without getting a license? Now, if you already had a marriage license and then you come upon this correction of the status later, that's one thing. Or if you already had a driver's license. But once you've changed your status to go out and take out a license, I'm just interested in a little discussion here about, you know, the veracity of doing something like that.
Well, okay. So everybody's situation is a little bit different. And what one person, one man or woman is situated with, and they're able to do, you know, take for instance, me, not, I don't expect everybody to do the same things and some of the drastic things that it seems like I've done in my life. And do the same thing because everybody has different situations and life needs are different. And so, whether we want to project, you know, hey, once you change your status, you correct your status, you should never, you know, get another license. You should try to get rid of all your licenses. You should, and that might really be right for somebody. And believe me, I know people that have done that and they really are excited to do it. Other people, it might really rock their world to think that, you know, somebody else is expecting them to do that. That's why I think it's so cool when we bring up the fact that that Cargill case says that even the acceptance of a license doesn't obligate the licensee, okay, to anything that would be repugnant to the Constitution, you know, make a long story short. So, we can each give our own, on a call like this or whatever, we can each give our own testimony of those things. But I think to have an expectation that everybody is going to follow the same path is a little bit unrealistic.
Okay, well, I want to be clear. I wasn't trying to preach that everybody would do necessarily what I would do or what you might do or all those other people that you were talking about. that were glad to have done that and felt really good about it. But at the same token, I think that we should at least think about what we're doing, because it could be too easy to fall back into doing things within that system and getting yourself caught up in that again. Because, you know, the license can lead, well, it was okay to do that, so, well, it must be okay to do this, you know. And it just goes on and on from there, and it starts to unravel. That was my point.
Okay.
I mean, well, that's a valid point, correct?
Well, okay. I think the people that are on this call and the people that are doing this is a very, very small group of people. It's, you know, I mean, if you think about it, it's a very, very small group of people. Actually, the people that actually do it is a smaller group than the people that are actually listening. That kind of conversation to me is, I mean, it's great if we have it, I guess, and we are having it now. But I don't, think it's, well, gosh, what I just said, you know, there's different situations. So, I don't know what you want to do with the conversation.
No, that's okay. That's okay. I just threw it out there for, like I said, a little conversation to get people to think about, so that, you know, taking a license or accepting a license doesn't lead into, oh, well, it's okay to do that, so it's okay to do something else. And before you know it, you start to unravel your position. That's all. I mean, think about each thing that you're doing.
Okay. Yeah. Good idea. Good idea.
Yeah. Sure. Does Michael want to add anything to that?
Mr. Edward, do you want to weigh in on that? I mean, I can understand what you're saying, you know, that your yeas be yeas and your nays be nays and all that.
No, GW was absolutely correct. I know this gentleman who loves his wife dearly and provides for her, protects her, is a gentleman, the whole bit. Yet she won't have anything to do with any of his associates in this business, as a defender of the Constitution, a patriot.
Mm-hmm.
He believes that he's being monitored and watched, and maybe even has crosshairs on him. And she doesn't want to be anywhere near that or those that he associates with to that end. So everyone out there has, like GW said, their own situation. And you got to go with what you are comfortable in and how you navigate that relationship with those that are close to you and those that you have to deal with. I hope that answers your question.
Okay. Thank you. Excuse me again. The other comment that I wanted to make was, you were talking about John being a peacemaker, and it's quite obvious that he does that, and he propounds that, and he does it well, and I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I tend to lean in your direction, Michael, where you appear to be a little more forthright about it and willing to challenge the other side or take an adversarial position if necessary. And I think at this point in time, going back to my prior question here, I think at this point in time, that's what we need to do. But it's not for me to impose my will on everybody else that's on this call or everybody else that's doing something like this. Now, the third part of what I wanted to ask about is when we talk about bringing...
Before you get to the third part, I want to cover something so that there's no misunderstanding here.
Okay.
I have witnessed John navigate litigious issues with great finesse and gentleness when I'm sitting there listening, because I audit the calls, every one of them. Martin will be auditing the calls as well.
and I'm biting my tongue. It's all I can do to keep my mouth shut. I want to reach through that phone and strangle somebody. Don't underestimate the value of John's passiveness. Being a pacifist does not mean that you're not a brave heart and can't do the things that you have to do if it ultimately comes to it. He's well equipped. Okay? If he chooses to be peaceful. I don't. I can't. I just don't have the patience for it. If you're stupid, you're stupid, and I can't help fix that. Sometimes talking to people is like playing chess with a pigeon. You know that story.
Well, thank you for that comment and clarifying that. Let me be clear. I do not underestimate John and his ability to do it his way. But as I pointed out on one of his calls several weeks ago, we also have to make this fit the personality that we're operating with. And if what he does not exactly fit your personality, you may not be able to accomplish by the methods John uses the same thing that John accomplishes. And you might have to take the position that you take or I would take where we aren't so patient with the other side. So we need to do, it goes back to what you said a little while ago, we need to do what fits us.
Well, my argument with John, position with John is, look, if you start taking out the pawns, that's the, and I'm speaking allegorically when I say take out, if you start removing them from the chessboard, the pawn being the point of contact, which is usually the Leo, with a red light special in your rearview mirror, if you immediately remove them from the board, the other players, i.e. the prosecutor, the judge, whatever, they're taking notice. And then number one, number two, word is getting around in that precinct. Why are you looking like that? I got this federal lawsuit filed by this clown 2 weeks ago that I gave a ticket to. No kidding. Let me see it. How quickly do you think that'll spread? That's why I call it grass fire communications instead of statewide communications. Mm-hmm. It's grass fire communications now. It'll spread through the local PD police departments. It'll spread through the prosecutor's offices. It'll spread through the judicial chambers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the third part of what I wanted to say was, when we're dealing with these people and you talk about filing a lawsuit against them, deprivation of rights, et cetera, do you think that we also need to look at how we're going to be able successfully, without necessarily taking the position of a private attorney general or some other position or getting the prosecutor to file charges on our behalf against someone, when it comes to conspiracy or the actual act of depriving someone of their rights? Do you think that we're going to make, in a reasonable time, more progress on how we can cover that end of it? Because I think that we could do to people that harm us, and I'm not saying this from a belligerent point of view or a point of view of, you know, trying to get even or whatever, but we need to send a message to these people that we speak to, and they just don't seem to want to listen, and they think they're all powerful. We need to send a message that they're going to meet with some type of harm within their own system. So I'll just give you a short example of someone that's done you wrong. But in order for them to exist in their job where they've done something wrong in relation to you and then caused you a harm, in order, for example, to take their CDL license in most states, they would have had to commit either a horrendous traffic event that they cannot commit holding a CDL, or they need to commit some type of criminal act. So when someone deprives us of our rights and we file a civil lawsuit for that, or we bring some type of action civilly, we haven't been able to do anything to them on a criminal basis where we can then attach something else that will bring harm to them and really make them understand. So where do you see us going with that?
Leave that up to you, Michael.
Mr. Edward?
Yeah, hold on a second. I'm on the other line. What's the question?
You want that question all over again?
No. Listen, I got to take a call on the other line. Whatever it is, we'll talk. Just give me a few minutes. I'll be right back.
Greg, do you have any comments on that?
No. To me, it was I don't even know where you're coming from.
And this ties in well, too. This is a good exercise, though, folks, on, you know, when I say at the top of every call, you know, you're expected to have done your due diligence before you reach out to any. This is a perfect example of that, because what Ken is questioning, this is valuable questions, it's valuable information, but you need to know what you're getting into. You need to know if that information provider is the right fit for you. You know, you don't want to just hear the first couple lines. That's part of the reason why we have these calls, is so that you can do some due diligence. You can listen, to the questions asked. You can get a feel, a style for that particular information provider before you ever even, step to the threshold. But when we're getting down to these kind of specifics, Kent, we would be better off, to do something off the radio, more like a private call. So let's set something up for that. You've got the 1-800 number. Just give us a shout, and Mr. Edward will set something up. And again, we're not
okay. Well, I'm back for you now.
Uh-huh.
I'm back if you want to spend the time, Kent.
Yeah.
Can you?
Okay.
15 seconds.
I was saying that when we talk about filing a lawsuit against these people, sometimes these people do extensive damage, they waste our time, they waste our resources, when they have no idea what they're doing, but they think that, they've been doing it this way for so long, they can just continue on. You know, everybody knows what the story is with that. So what I'm saying is when we file a civil lawsuit against them, there are times, and I'll just draw an analogy of, without going into details of something that happened to me the other day, we have a situation where someone took an action against me, ended up calling the cops, made a big deal over a bus fare and so forth and so on, when they clearly did not know the New Jersey tariffs and what they are required to do upon the entry of someone that wants to ride the bus to which they would provide transit or transportation. And they got so upset with me that they ended up calling the cops, and, it was a big rigmarole, and I had to tell the cops I consider myself an American national, therefore I don't have any ID. And then that got into a discussion, it was one discussion after the other before the thing was finally brought to an end. However, this party who did this is clearly uninformed, clearly violated the terms under which they operate transportation. So I was looking at the terms under which their CDL could be pulled, because no CDL, no driving, no job, no payment, no paycheck. And they have to either do something horrendous with a traffic violation that they can't do with a CDL, or they have to have committed some criminal act. Now, by just filing a civil action against them or doing an administrative hearing or going through whatever procedures one might want to go through to get remuneration from these people for wasting your time and violating your rights, et cetera. When we file a civil lawsuit, we're not really bringing anything criminal against them. Well, that's not going to be good enough, for example, to try and get their CDL pulled. So what I'm asking is, do you think that we'll have some kind of, let's just call it, for lack of a better word, quote unquote, streamlined way in the future, that when we're going to file an action against these people, without taking the position of a private attorney general or without necessarily having to get the prosecutor, talk to the prosecutor and get them to file criminal charges against these types of people for their acts or actions that are improper or illegal or unlawful, do you see a way that, and this was touched on with John, but it really wasn't, settled and resolved. Is there going to be a way to do this where we're actually getting them prosecuted criminally while we also have a civil lawsuit against them, and that will enable us to bring other actions against them within their own system, like attempting to pull their CDL and putting them out of a job?
Yeah. All right. the short answer is no. That's the short answer. Mm-hmm. Samuel Adams said, if you love love wealth better than liberty, the tranquility of servitude better than the animated contest of freedom, go home from us in peace. We ask not your counsel or your arms. Crouch down and lick the hands which feed you. May your chains set lightly upon you, and may posterity forget that we ever you were ever our countrymen. End quote. Something mm-hmm. like that. All mm-hmm. right? The animated contest of freedom. There are no shortcuts. And we have replaced open warfare, the sword, the shield, or my preference, a long rifle with a high-powered cartridge from a great distance, judging windage and stuff, et cetera, is to go through court. Now, a wise man will not run in head first into court on a major issue. He'll come in sideways. And sideways is first civil court. Because in civil court, the rules of gathering evidence is greatly different from what it is in criminal courts. And that's the strategy that the IRS has used for generations, is they always mm-hmm. come after civilly first, gather all the evidence, because you have to supply these things, whereas in a criminal litigation, you wouldn't have to supply them, but civilly you do. And then they get all that information together, that evidence, and then they come after you criminally, and there's you're being hunted for bear. So the point is that there is no quick, easy way to do this. It takes time, and you must be one who is willing to invest that time. Otherwise, you'll be like 97%. I'm making reference to the 3% symbols you see around that are considered fascist and racist and everything else. The 3% of the people that are willing to engage in the animated contest of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I answered your question.
Yeah, partially. I'll leave it there. I don't want to bore everybody else on the telephone call, so I'll leave it there for now.
Mm-hmm. Just remember, and again, this is another good quote from Samuel Adams, it does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men. That's what we're doing tonight.
Come be a patriot, Karen. No, I'm kidding. Jennifer.
Oh, am I back on?
Yes, ma'am.
Sounds like you.
Okay. The person talking about marriage, you can create, like my daughter was married in Albania, and they did not accept her marriage certificate in America. And anyway, I had another friend who got married, and not in a church, and just by a officiant, and the marriage certificate just says they were united in marriage by the authority of natural law in original jurisdiction as endowed upon man by birth. And if you have the two parties, bride and groom, sign it, then the father of the bride, mother of the bride, father of the groom, mother of the groom, and maids of honors, groomsmen, brothers, sisters, officiant, had everyone, they can't deny that that's a legal, you know, that's your marriage certificate. And if you want to make it more legal, you could, I guess, file for record at the county clerk, but you don't have to do, you know, file it the way they want us to. I can send you a copy of the marriage certificate I have.
Send that to me, please, Jennifer Sue, and put attention, Dexter.
Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah, and I'm going to add something. Your marriage license, Wadley versus Newhall, Circuit Court, North District of California, March 13, 1905, quote, civil rights under the 14th Amendment are for federal citizens and not state citizens. Federal citizens as parents have no right to the custody of their infant children except subject to the paramount right of the state. And then, of course, coming in with Wheeling Steel Corporation versus Fox, 298 U.S. 193, quote, therefore, the U.S. citizen, open bracket, citizens of the District of Columbia, close back bracket, residing in one of the states of the Union, are classified as property and franchises of the federal government. Your marriage license acquired at the county courthouse, whatever, is a three-way contract with a paramount partner of that three-way contract being the state, not the husband and wife.
That should be between God and the father, the bride, and the bride and groom. That makes a legal marriage.
Yep.
And government wants to be God, that's all.
Yep.
Tell them to piss off, because they're not.
Thank you, Jennifer. Dexter, again, in Indiana, go ahead.
Yeah, Jennifer, thanks for that information that you just talked about the marriage license. And if you could mail or email that to Michael, I would appreciate that. One of the questions I was going to ask has to do with assets, and I just realized, just reminded myself that this isn't the right call for that, so I'll have to save that call. But the gentleman that was from New Jersey, I think we might know each other, and so I'm going to call you tomorrow. But I wanted to say that the license, I would love to get away from all licenses, because basically we're paying for something that we're supposed to be able to do naturally without, you know, having to pay to do it and being controlled underneath the state. But at the same time, we want it legal. And it sounds like the way Jennifer's talking, it would be legal, because if something would happen to me or my fiance, you know, we want the our wishes to be carried out, and we don't want any family interference. But that's why we were pursuing the license through the state. But hopefully the information Jennifer has, we can make that a moot issue and not have to worry about the state. Now, if that is the case, how do we get our pastor to sign off on it? Because I'll about guarantee that he doesn't have a clue about any of this.
Well, that's, yeah, getting your pastor to sign up. And, you know, hopefully he's willing, you know, if you sit down with him and explain where you're coming from. But,
okay.
If it was me and I was similarly situated, I'd find a pastor that would.
Okay. Well, we're coming up on 11th hour, you know, not this coming weekend, but next weekend. So we'll just have to see what happens. We've been looking for this information for, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, I think. So, but I'm glad that Jennifer has the information, so now we can do something with it. And with all that, I just said I'll, you know, yield the conversation back to you all. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much. All right, now back to, I'm sorry, now we've got Scott in Oregon. Go ahead, Scott.
I just wanted to chime in on the marriage license as well. I was married to a Brazilian before I knew any of the things that we're discussing now. And I just want to say that I went to banks and DMV and other places to have her name put on my accounts so that she could be here. Not one person during that entire time ever asked to see the marriage license. I just said, this is my wife. And they said, okay. I brought all the papers. I did all the stuff and everything. And not one of them asked to see it. Had her name changed to mine. And, again, nobody asked to see one piece of document. The other thing is as we didn't last, but that's beside the point. After I started learning about this stuff, I found out that you can divorce your state. So I remember talking to people, and I got a hold of some documents as well, and some people were opting to divorce their state based on their pastor's incorrect information on what a marriage license is for, because it was licensed, as you know, is to do something that would otherwise be considered illegal or immoral. And it used to be back at the time of the Civil War that it was illegal and or immoral to marry somebody of a different race than yourself. And that's what the marriage license was all about. It was originally to help people come together without being discriminated against. And then it, of course, morphed into something where everybody needs it for everything. And that's not the case. Second of all, anybody can sign the marriage license, basically. I know they say you have to have a preacher or a pastor or somebody of that nature signing the document, but that's not really the case. You know, because people can go online and get and become a minister, you know, just because they say I'm a minister. And again, nobody ever asks to see the documents. So anybody can sign a marriage license. It's helpful if it's somebody that will be around in case they need to have confirmation or something. But anybody can sign it. You don't need to sign it. Having a civil contract and registering it is a much better way to go. Keep the state completely out of it. The purpose of having the state attached to your marriage license as a third-party interloper is in case you get a divorce. If you go and get a divorce, you tend to become greedy and unfair and inconsiderate. You know, you worked hard for all this. It belongs to you. Well, that's the same thing the other person is thinking. And you wind up in battles and fights and everything. And so that's when the state steps in and says, okay, this is how we're going to do it. You get this much, somebody else gets this much. Another point is my cousin spent some time with a girl in Montana, and it didn't last very long. It lasted for a couple of months, and they broke up, and he came back to Oregon, and she got pregnant. And so she decided, they were never married, so she decided to get a divorce. Never showed any documents, never did anything. He thought it was a joke because they were never legally married, and it's not a common law state. So she goes to the judge and says she wants everything, and all the bills go to him. You know, extremely unfair. But that's a typical way you do it when you go and get a divorce. And the judge said, okay, and then he was strapped down with all these debts and messed up his life for a number of years. So the point is, you know, some people make too big of a deal of something because, like I said, nobody showed any papers for any of this stuff. They just did it, and it was accepted. There was one other point I wanted to make. Um, You need witnesses to, it's helpful to have witnesses, but technically you don't even need witnesses. In Oregon, common law, if you look through the statutes and everything, common law is not recognized in Oregon, but it doesn't say that it's illegal or immoral. So whether or not Oregon recognizes your marriage or not, it's irrelevant. You can still claim, like I said, I had a wife, I had a marriage license, and all I did was say, I have one, and that was all. Actually, I didn't even say I had a marriage license. I just said, this is my wife. And they gave her everything and processed her and gave her a driver's license and all the stuff. So you don't necessarily need certain people signing documents. It's helpful to know that the father of the bride has okayed the marriage, because that's the way it's supposed to be. But he doesn't even need to be there. All it needs to be is she says, he's my husband, she says, and he says, she's my wife. And who can disagree with that? How does anybody know? Somebody comes up and says, you're not really married. So what proof do you have? Are you spying on me? Are you imposing on my right to privacy? Are you interfering in my marriage? You know, what proof do you have this person is not my spouse? So there are ways around it. I've known people to write to the pastors and say, I forget what the word was at the time, but it kind of invalidates the marriage license, because, and they weren't getting divorced.
A null?
It might be annulled. That might be the word I'm thinking of. But they wanted to end the marriage and say the pastor was not acting properly. Guess he doesn't know. He just goes by what everybody tells him, especially lawyers. That's why most of the churches today are 503C corporations and not ministers as required under the law. Ministers don't need to pay taxes. So there are those different levels that people can use in order to circumvent the marriage license. You don't need one. It's good to have something in case you do get a divorce, a prenup agreement. And what do you do with the prenup agreement? You register it in the state. So it's documented. And you both agree to it. And then if you decide to get a divorce for whatever reason, you go to that document and use it as a guide to how you're going to separate. I think that's about all I have to say.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right. From Freedoms Radio, Anonymous writes in, I received my passport book in 2 weeks, but the passport card has not arrived. Been 8 weeks. Is this normal, or should I try and reach out to someone?
Yeah, I would. If they're saying they've gotten their, is this one of Michael's, one of our students?
It's anonymous. It says, I received my passport book in 2 weeks, but the passport card has not arrived. It's been 8 weeks. Is this normal, or should I try and reach someone? Whoever typed that on there on the Freedoms Radio side, could you be so kind and, if you feel comfortable with, just kind of give us a little bit of an idea of who it is that we're speaking with, just simply for the purpose of being able to, better answer the question.
Yeah, did they go through Michael
or did you go through something similar but different? Because it really is going to depend on how.
I don't remember anybody called Anonymous that we have as a student.
Yeah. Now, the reason why we're bringing this up, ladies and gentlemen, it's really very important, and I hope that GW responds off of what I'm saying, is that there are several
other entities out there on the internet that, you know, basically it sounds like they're doing the same thing that we're doing. In fact, when you get down to it, they're going to say, why am I paying you $5,000 to walk me through all this and educate me and train me and give me support and always be there no matter what, because this goes on for years and years. Why when I can go over here to such and such group and they'll do the whole thing with me for $350, or they won't even charge me. They just post it on their website. GW, would you like to talk about that, what you found by having the opportunity to look at some of their paperwork?
Yeah, well, I mean, we talked about this over and over again. Yeah, I mean, hey, if you feel comfortable doing that, go for it. You know, that's the first thing I always say, is that I don't want anybody, you know, thinking it's a huge burden to use our methods. But if you're so inclined and you want that kind of help, there's many reasons to do that. I mean, over the years I've had many people that have gone through some of these other groups and just been frustrated with the whole thing. And so, you know, that's all I can say to that. If you're inclined to, you know, just want to price shop or something like that and think that, you know, that's a good thing, I mean, go for it. But I'm not going to spend much energy trying to convince you the other way. But
yeah,
there is with Michael and with Brother John and with this group, there is a synergy here that is really, really beneficial. There's a number of people, I'm sure there's some people listening to the call right now that have you know, certain situations that they were dealing with, and that this group is predisposed to really being able to help with some of those extreme situations, whereas there's a number of groups out there that are trying to, I'm not against pirating it, or if you want to call it that, or whatever, or trying to help, you know, they're helping people to try to, you know, get through this process. That there's nothing wrong with that in itself, but there's a lot of people screwing things up out there. And
yep.
So that's, you know, I know Michael deals with it. I deal with it on a pretty continual basis with people that have been burned and done the wrong thing. So
the worst thing that comes out of when you don't have supervision is something called case precedent. And case precedent is actually can be a very frightening thing to add time and expense to what you're attempting to accomplish. And that is when you've got someone, and the worst students that I observe, the worst, are those the ones that really think they know everything. I've been doing this 30 years. What are you talking about? A perfect example, I'm going to pick on GW for a second. A perfect example would be if the entire house of cards of the IRS descended upon GW in all different directions at the same time, where he was being cluster bombed by them. He could either listen to John to show him how to navigate his way through it, GW being now a student and John the teacher, or he could be confident in his own knowledge of all these years and just, you know, take up his own sword and shield. His call, his life. But you see what I'm saying? Even those that are sincerely and knowledgeable, like GW, when you're into something else, it may be wise to have an opinion and another consideration in dealing with those matters. The people that give the most have the worst outcomes are those that are their own worst enemies because they know everything. I hope that helps.
Right. Star 2 on your keypad, folks. If you have a question, star 2 to raise your hand. And, of course, on the Freedoms Radio side, type it in and click submit. I think that's going to take
it. Looks like we're pretty much wrapping it up, Martin.
Yep. All right. What are we looking at tomorrow?
I want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. I want to remind everyone, always, I want to remind everyone that our calls are Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday that are live calls, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday. And that tomorrow night is John's night. However, John has an appointment he has to attend to, and I'll be doing the call. So, I invite you to come over, and we're going to talk some more about everything. It'll be up to you. But it's going to hinge upon jurisdiction. It will hinge upon its applications in your life. And, of course, Wednesday we have Mr. Slevin, and Mr. Slevin will be returning, demonstrating for you just how critically important it is that a LLC be established in the manner that he prescribes for your use, whether it's for you in your personal capacity as an employee or in your business capacity as an entrepreneur. Either way, it works beautifully. And it works hand in glove with the golden horseshoe that you've heard for the last 10, 15 years on Bernie's calls, that it works hand in glove with that by way of two charitable religious trusts that come in with 50-50 ownership. So that having been said, GW, do you have any closing comments you'd like to make?
No, I would just say thanks for attending the call, and everybody have a super restful evening.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you.